This is VFR Kature and you're listening to WGXC Accra 98.7 FM.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and today on the WGXC Morning Show, we're going to speak live with Jack Mab, the Columbia County Director of Public Health, around 9:30 a.m. You can send us your questions, post them on Facebook, on Twitter. If you'd like to ask Jack Mab a question, we'll be mostly talking about the Omicron variant and what people should do to avoid catching it now that cases are out of control locally. We'll also hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
On air, in air, channel connection, and the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. The stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. The stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at wgxc.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org/donate now.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the Rodney Shop in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Shanice Holmes Brown reports in the Times Union that Albany County tied the largest number of people in intensive care with COVID-19 January 13th with 19. That matches the number in the ICU last January 7th, back when vaccines were just starting to be distributed. There are 125 people in Albany County hospitalized with coronavirus right now. Albany County also has announced January 13th two more residents dead from COVID-19. A man in his 50s and a woman in her 60s. Quote, "This is why we need to continue to prevent the spread of the virus and protect our most vulnerable from the worst illnesses caused by it through vaccinations, boosters, mask wearing, and social distancing," unquote. Albany County Executive Dan McCoy said. Read more about the story in the Albany Times-Union.
The local COVID news remains grim. HudsonValley360.com reported two more coronavirus-related deaths in Greene County January 12th. Greene County officials also announced a new single-day new case count, 282 on January 12th. That beat the 208 cases announced on January 5th. Greene County Administrator Sean Groden said, and I quote, "We have not reached our peak yet," end quote. He said that getting the virus locally was inevitable. Groden, who is not a doctor or scientist, said, and I quote, "You're going to get this thing, and by getting vaxxed, you can have somewhat normalcy. You don't have to worry as much with where you're going with crowds indoors or family affairs," end quote. Columbia County, meanwhile, also reported another COVID-19 death on January 12th and 230 more cases.
Nick Reisman is reporting for New York State of Politics that Comptroller Tom DiNapoli announced January 12th that property tax increases at the school district level will be capped at 2% this year, as inflation has increased over the last year. The move will impact 676 school districts and 10 cities with fiscal years that began July 1st. The cap limits the amount a municipality or school district can raise its property tax levy. The amount the cap is raised or lowered is largely tied to inflation. This is the first time the cap has been set at 2% since 2019, after a decade of largely flat inflation. Quote, "School district and municipal officials must remain fiscally cautious to stay at under the cap as they prepare their budgets," unquote, DiNapoli said. Quote, "Even with significant funding from the state and federal government, school and local communities are faced with the rapid increase in inflation, pandemic surge, and trying to retain and recruit employees," unquote. School boards can override the cap if 60% of voters approve a budget that includes a higher tax levy increase. Read more about the story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com.
Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that New York's prison population got considerably smaller and older, according to a report released January 13th by State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli. The number of older people incarcerated increased slightly from 7,511 people to 7,586 people in New York between 2008 and 2021, the time frame of the study. Since the overall population in prison fell, the percentage of the state's prison population over 50 doubled during that time from 12% to 24.3%. DiNapoli said in a statement announcing the report, and I quote, "Since our initial 2017 report detailing the rise in the number of aging incarcerated individuals, we found that despite reductions in the overall size of the population, the share of older prisoners is increasing. In the months ahead, policymakers should examine opportunities to reduce the population of incarcerated individuals 50 and over where public safety would not be compromised," end quote. Overall, New York's prison population is at its lowest since the mid-1980s, with four prisons scheduled to close in March. And you can read more about this story at New York State of Politics.
Danny Jin is reporting for the Berkshire Eagle that the CSX Corporation, the owner of tracks on the proposed Berkshire Flyer route in Berkshire County, Massachusetts, has agreed to allow Amtrak to operate New York City to Pittsfield passenger train service this summer. CSX will also meet six other conditions that Amtrak requested as part of the company's proposed acquisition of Pan Am Railways, which co-owns the Hoosac Tunnel. The railroad agreed to the conditions in a January 12th filing with the Federal Surface Transportation Board, a day before the board began a hearing for the transaction. Amtrak previously said it would oppose the deal if CSX did not agree to its conditions. State Senator Adam Hinz called the agreement an exciting development, adding that the Berkshire Flyer is, quote, ready to start, unquote, in the summer and will play a part in the regional passenger rail resurgence that lawmakers are looking for. Hinz said he previously was concerned over CSX, quote, lack of cooperation, unquote, in passenger rail discussions, but he now supports the deal. Passenger rail service between the Berkshire County and New York City would could begin this summer. Amtrak already runs daily passenger service between the Albany Rensselaer Station and New York's Penn Station. The Berkshire Flyer adds Friday and Sunday continuations between Albany Rensselaer and Pittsfield's Joseph Skelsey Intermodal Transportation Center. While the 2022 pilot plans to bring summer tourists for weekend trips, Hines has said he would like to see the project evolve into daily and year-round service. Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle.
The Times Union named Catskills junior basketball player Janae Brantley Girls Athlete of the Week for the period of January 3rd through 9th. She can hardly be called a player living alone on her offensive accolades. Last week, Brantley had 3 triple-doubles in 3 victories, 32 points, 13 rebounds, 11 steals, and 5 assists in a 61-17 win against Anteora, 41 points, 12 rebounds, 12 assists, and 7 steals in an 86-19 victory over Albany Leadership, and 42 points, 11 rebounds, 11 steals, and 6 assists in a victory over Coxsackie Athens, 89-31. Catskill coach Chris Quinn said, and I quote, "What's amazing to me is she always makes the right play. She always looks to make a great pass, whether or not it gets finished. It is just so instinctual for her to do the right thing," end quote. Brantley claimed surprise about the triple-doubles. Brantley said, and I quote, "I did because I'm just going out there playing my game. It's a little surprising at the end when I find out," end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Noah Eckstein is reporting for Columbia Green Media that in a celebration of its 150th anniversary this year, the Firemen's Association of the State of New York, or FASNY, will replace the word firemen with, quote, firefighter in its title. Change is being made as a gesture of inclusion, a way to recognize the diversity of everyone working in the industry. Quote, "We felt it was certainly the time to move forward," unquote, FASNY President John Farrell said. In the last decade, the organization voted twice to update its name, but the measure never passed. Quote, "We did not make this change lightly," unquote, said FASNY First Vice President Edward Tassi. Quote, "We know and respect the great history of our association. We also know that our name must represent today's volunteer fire service," unquote. The change was finally approved by the FASNY board in December. Laurie M. Hantz, one of the 2 women on the board, initially voted against the name change. Hans said she never had a problem with the original name and felt a sense of historical reverence toward the title of fireman since her father was the chief of the Hanawha Falls Fire Department in St. Lawrence County. Women have served as firefighters since about 1815 when a black woman named Molly Williams started working with the Oceanus Engine Company No. 11 in Lower Manhattan. Generally, the role of firefighter was seen as being too dangerous for women. Quote, "Until 5 years ago, FASNY felt like a boys' club," unquote, said Hans, who added, "It took about 2 years for the men she worked with to fully accept her." Quote, "Some of the older members took longer, but FASNY can't be labeled a boys' club anymore," unquote, she said. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Friday, a slight chance of snow showers before 10 a.m. It will be mostly cloudy with the temperature falling to around 22 degrees by 5 p.m. Friday night, it will be partly cloudy with a temperature low of around zero and wind chill values as low as minus 15. And on Saturday, mostly sunny with a high near 12 degrees. And Saturday night, mostly clear with a low of around minus 1 degree. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
You have tuned into all sorts of creative community voices on the radio Friday, January 14th on 90.7 FM, including at 10 a.m., it's time for the Global Go-Go Show. Today with tracks from Tabo Afrobeat, Atakora Manu, the Zambo Aguziva Orchestra, and others. At noon, Jared Wiggishud is live in Hudson with the Sugar Shack Jukebox, playing all kinds of new funk, R&B, rock, pop, and more. At 2 p.m., the Data Cult audio show features Annalid today until 3 p.m. when new music comes on the air. At 6 p.m., we head live to Catskill for Clubhouse Radio, where youth on Main Street there talk about their issues and play their music on the radio until 7 p.m. when youth from Hudson take over with the Bound by Books show as they talk about what they've been reading with members of the Hudson Area Library. Then tune in at 10 p.m. for the Friday Night Vibe session. DJ Shavar Thomas, or DJ Var, is live in Hudson in the WGXC studio at the First Presbyterian Church on Warren Street until midnight with reggae, dancehall, pop, hip-hop, and more on 90.7 FM.
To get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page and copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
Monday, January 17th, the citizens of Hudson are celebrating Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday with a holiday observance that begins at 11 a.m. with a motorcade preceding the rally. Vehicles line up at 10:30 a.m. at the Columbia and North 6th Street parking lot in Hudson. At the conclusion of the motorcade, there will be a short presentation on the steps of the Shiloh Baptist Church at 14 Warren Street in Hudson, and there will be special guest speakers and more. That is Monday, January 17th, from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., Martin Luther King Day in Hudson.
Welcome to the Jazz Disturbance. A show featuring jazz and other improvisational music from local, regional, worldwide, and world-class artists, connecting listeners with the people and places presenting in the area. The Jazz Disturbance airs on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 5th Sunday of each month from our Hudson studio from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. The Jazz Disturbance, 90.7 degrees, hot. WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Max Hamill of Red Hook, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, January 14th. Hope you're ready for true winter. Anyone riding on radial tires are going to feel things get a little bowling ballish as their tires harden in the cold air. Make sure that you plan a little extra time for travel, slow things down a bit. Make sure you have emergency items in your car. Extra coat, blanket, and emergency grip blanket in the glove box is a really great idea. Some water, portable phone charger, maybe a road flare, and you'll be in much better shape. The early morning temperature range for today in the region is 25 in Wemple and 30 in Winchell. Not much of a change in that as the day goes on. Wind gusts pick up around 11 a.m. a high temperature of 32 happens at 1 p.m. In that time, conditions will be in the freezing range. Frostbite isn't a major concern, but layer up so you are comfortable and protected from the wind. That means gloves, hats, and maybe scarves. After 2 p.m., that all changes. The temperature starts to fall and the wind gusts become more persistent. You will be hearing it howl tonight as temperatures drop to dangerous levels. Near 11 p.m., frostbite becomes a serious concern, getting more extreme as we slide towards a low of 2 degrees near dawn. Be inside if at all possible. Some people will have to leave taps running overnight. Tomorrow will be dry with a high of 13 at 2 p.m. Winds calm down a bit, making conditions sub-freezing. If going outside, be sure to bundle up. Saturday night will be dangerously sub-freezing again. This time, temperatures get closer to zero. Sunday will be dry with a more normal feeling high of 23 degrees. Monday, oh Monday, it is looking fun. Currently, it looks like 4 inches of snow will be on the ground by sunup, then another 4 inches falls during the day. A high of 36 is expected. Conditions could turn to mixed in the afternoon, but seem to favor snow. We will be keeping an eye on it. If there are major changes to that, there could be a special weekend weather update. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 12:21 a.m., then low tide at 6:33 a.m., high tide again at 12:43 p.m., and low tide again at 7:25 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 32 degrees. Sunset today will be at 4:32 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:17 a.m. Looking way up, we see still a good possibility for geomagnetic storms on Sunday as a dense plasma stream flows over us. Satellites late last night detected an M2-class solar flare, possibly an X-class event, causing a radio blackout over Australia. Solar wind speed is currently 358 kilometers per second at 10.9 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently same as the past few days. Fair below 4 megahertz till dark, then fair below 30 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 1, quiet. The current sunspot number is 111. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
I stand here in the name of the blood shed by those foot soldiers, Dr. Martin Luther King and John Robert Lewis, who shed his blood on the Edmund Pettus Bridge.
It was all eyes on voting rights Thursday on Capitol Hill as both chambers of Congress continued the fight over the future of the filibuster. On a party-line vote, Democrats in the House passed a new version of the bill designed to trigger a fight on filibuster reform in the Senate. Democratic Representative Sheila Jackson Lee of Texas was one of several members of the House Black Caucus who spoke in favor of the bill.
My friends who vote no today will disregard and ignore that bloodshed. I refuse to ignore the blood that was shed for the right to vote.
As it stands, Democrats would need 60 votes to pass the measure. If the filibuster is suspended, the bill could pass with a simple majority. In a symbolic move, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says he plans to put the bill to a vote by this coming Monday, Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
If the right to vote is the cornerstone of our democracy, then how can we, in good conscience, allow for a situation in which the Republican Party can debate and pass voter suppression laws at the state level with only a simple majority vote, but not allow the United States Senate to do the same?
Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell accused Democrats of trying to force a federal takeover of elections and argued there are more important issues Congress should be focusing on.
Now, there's a path forward for my Democratic colleagues to respond to the country they have so badly disappointed. But it isn't to try to break the Senate and rewrite election laws. It's to actually start tackling the issues that American families need tackled.
The filibuster reform effort, and therefore the voting rights bill, will likely fail, as Democratic Senators Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona remain opposed to the rule change.
While I continue to support these bills, I will not support separate actions that worsen the underlying disease of division infecting our country.
As the Omicron variant continues surging, President Joe Biden has announced plans to increase availability of at-home COVID-19 tests. In December, the White House announced it would order 500 million at-home tests. Thursday, President Biden said they would double the order.
I mean, 1 billion tests in total to meet future demand. And we'll continue to work with the retailers and online retailers to increase availability.
Meanwhile, the U.S. Supreme Court Thursday rejected the president's vaccinate or test requirement for businesses with at least 100 employees. The president is pushing for large employers to institute their own vaccine requirements. According to the Associated Press, at least a third of Fortune 100 companies have already done so. The court did allow the administration to push forward with a vaccine requirement for healthcare workers. I'm Jonah Chester for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org. All right, you're listening to the WGXC Morning Show. I'm Tom Rowe, live in Accra, and right now we've got on the phone Jack Mabb from the Columbia County Department of Health to tell us just exactly how crazy things are out there and what we should do about them. Jack, thank you for joining us today.
Morning, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So I think by all measures, everything is the worst it's ever been. Is that true?
Well, when you look back at 2021, our worst month was last January, which you would expect because everybody's inside. We had 1,467 cases through the entire month. As of this morning, we have 1,787 through half of January of 2022. So, in the last week, we've set several times we set records for the numbers of positive cases in a single day. Wednesday was our peak, if you will, 249 cases, and that's just huge for us.
And the hospitalizations and deaths, are they at the pace of last January or above the pace or where?
Well, unfortunately, the deaths are at a pace higher, too. That's the bad news. The good news is hospitalizations aren't bad. We have 18 in the hospital today, only 2 people in the ICU. Both of those people are vented, which is as bad as it can get. But we had higher numbers of hospitalizations last January and February. So, and I would say that one of the hardest parts for us is that the deaths that have been happening, it seems like every second or third day we have another death. There, pretty much out of 124 deaths since we started, we've had 2 that were vaccinated people. So the vast majority are people who are unvaccinated.
And other records that are being set are is vaccination is up? Is that true?
We're doing really well in the county when it comes to our vaccination rates. We're running in the 80% of adults having got the vaccine, and I think that just overall population we're at 72%, and that of course counts kids that can't get it yet. I'm not happy with the number of students that we're getting. Parents are still holding back on that. We're running around 30% of the children 5 to 11. A little bit better. Well, it's been longer time, but for the 12 to 18s, it's nudging up into the 60%. And interestingly enough, the boosters aren't really getting traction. We have a pod every Thursday from 3 to 6 at the college, and then on Fridays afternoons, 1 to 3. Last week we did 240 some on Thursday night. That's our best pod numbers typically. Out of 250 shots, we did 160 some out of 200 shots on Friday. Yesterday, we only did 106. So it's starting to drop off. And interestingly enough, among senior citizens, it's still running in the low 60%. So even seniors aren't necessarily getting the booster. I think it's an important thing that people could do is get boosted.
And
So what does all that mean, all those statistics that what actions should people be taking now?
Well, I think that the first thing is that we're much like the rest of the country and the world, the Omicron variant is very contagious, and it is spreading pretty well. It's spreading pretty quickly. On the other hand, it's not as dangerous. It's not as virulent, if you will. I think our hospitalizations show that. The state health department has basically said in the last couple of days that we're 2 weeks behind New York City, where they're experiencing a drop-off in cases. I think it's going to run its course, and I think people should stay the course. I think people, if you haven't been boosted, if you should get boosted, you can certainly go to any pharmacy and get it done whatever day you decide to do it, and you can certainly come to one of our pods. But get boosted, certainly if you haven't received any shots at all, get the shots, and wear the mask in public. I know people are tired of it. I think when I go out and about, I see a lot of compliance with it. People are wearing the mask in public. I think we just need to hang in. We need to hang in for another couple of weeks, and I think we'll see the numbers dropping off.
And, some people don't understand the case counts are at the highest ever. The deaths are back to the highest ever. The hospitalizations are not quite the highest ever, but they're still high in the ICUs. Why isn't there any change in government policy about what people should do?
Well, I guess my question, I would ask the question to that question is, what kind of changes should we be talking about here? Certainly from the perspective of public health and public health directors across New York State, our perspective, and we certainly have passed this on to the state health department and the governor's office, is we're not going to be able to beat this thing. We're not going to be able to quell it to a point where, you know, it's virtually non-existent. It's going to become endemic. There's going to be a new variant coming along behind this one. And we need to, some things are happening in a positive way. So, as you know, we have for the last 22 months been doing case investigations and contact tracing. We've been following positive individuals, asking them who their contacts were, finding out who their family members were, who they worked with, who they went to school with, and whatever. We've been doing that all along, and it's not effective anymore because people don't want to do it. They don't want to give up their friends. They don't want to tell us who their coworkers are. Some of the rudest people on the planet are people that we're calling right now. They slam the phone down. They swear at the nurses. And the state has indicated to us we can stop doing contact tracing. And I think that's a big plus. I think that's a part of letting go. I think that's a part of getting to the place where this is endemic. It's not going to go away. Let's find a way to live with it. Let's find a way to go about our business, go to our meetings in person, do our vacations in person, and go to wherever we want to go, and understand that we're going to have people dying from, you know, COVID-related things. People are going to go to the hospital, and every now and then we're going to run a course with a variant, and we're just going to have to live with it.
All right, so you turned around my question. I'm going to turn around the question a third time back at you and say, nobody wants to take public health advice from Tom Rowe. So I don't know what to do. What you're telling me is, and second, we have record numbers here locally and nationally, but locally, and both counties, Greene and Columbia, announced they're going to announce less information. You're saying you can't do contact tracing. Greene County's saying we can't release the quarantine information anymore. Why is the only governmental change when the outbreak has gotten the worst is to release less information? And what you just said, I thought, was that the government can't do anything about it. There's nothing anybody can do about this. Is all that true?
Well, I think, first of all, we're going to continue to do case investigations. The state of New York has created what they call the VCC, which is the virtual call center that's been around, you know, for a while now. They went out and hired hundreds more people to do case investigations, and that is to contact people who are positive. And unfortunately, the contact is virtual. It's either an email or it's a text or whatever. It's not going to be personal like we've been doing. And it's going to be basically saying, you're positive. This is what you need to do to be safe. This is what you need to do to keep your family safe. It's very unsatisfying for us. And we are holding on to our cases as best we can. The VCC actually kicked in today for the first time for us. They're doing 40 cases. So they're going to take 40 cases off our 109, which is what it is now. It'll be higher by the end of the day. But we're going to continue to contact people who are positive, and we're going to continue to talk to them how do they keep their family safe, and as far as notifying their employment. The schools are still continuing to do contact tracing in schools, and we're going to do as much as we can, as we physically can, to keep contacting people personally and talking to them. But the contact tracing hasn't worked for a long time. It hasn't worked. People, they yes you to death, then they go to work. They don't follow the guidelines for quarantining, and it hasn't been effective. And so we're going to continue to do the case investigations and talking to the positive people. And I think there's, you know, we're going to start doing more testing in the community. We're starting on January 24th. We're going to set up on 3 days a week to test the school students whose parents have kept them home because they were ill, but whose symptoms began to resolve. So if they're resolving, they probably don't have COVID. They have a cold or whatever, so that they can get back in school. And that's going to be one of our emphasis. And I understand what you're saying, that this is when the numbers are highest, we're starting to let go. And I can only say that it makes sense from a public health perspective. Another couple weeks from now, when the cases start to drop off dramatically, which I think they will, we won't go back to contact tracing. We're going to continue every effort to contact the positives and talk them through what they can do to keep everybody around them safe.
Yeah, I before we go any further, I mean, I just don't understand how healthcare workers and you and other folks that are doing this for just about 3 years now can go through it any longer. I mean, if people are yelling at you, and it's just seems horrific, the mental anguish on people like you and the people in the emergency room. You guys must all be at your wit's end.
Well, it's COVID fatigue, and there's no, you know, among the nurses who are doing these calls here, it's a real thing. And there's some relief knowing that the VCC is going to take some of the pressure off of us. You know, when you feel you can safely make 70 or 80 phone calls a day and you get 266 in a day, that creates its own tension, because these folks, despite being at this for 22 months, 23 months now, are still dedicated and still want to make those calls. So yeah, it's been very difficult for them.
Yeah, I get anxious just reading the reports of the numbers. I can't imagine having to do all that work. The one question where I was trying to set the scene before that I didn't ask was the congregate facilities. What is the situation in the nursing homes and the jails and prisons, and thirdly, in the schools right now?
Well, I'll start with the good news. The schools they do have a lot of kids that are positive, but the kids aren't getting them in school. They're not getting positive in school. They're not even getting positive on the buses, which we thought that they would. And we, in fact, we were doing 6 feet. We were quarantining 6 feet around a positive on a bus. We backed it off to 3 because the science supports it, that the kids aren't getting it on the bus. They're getting it in their family. Somebody's bringing it into the family, and Omicron is so contagious that it's spreading so quickly. Up until this past week, the nursing homes were doing pretty well. We have an outbreak at the Grand at Barnwell. We have 95 positive residents. Their census is 224, so we're talking pretty creeping up on half of the population was positive. And they also have 36 positive staff. Livingston Hills has an outbreak there. They had 13 residents and 21 positive staff. So far, Fireman's Home and Barnwell. Barnwell had a little bump, you know, three, four cases among their residents and then three, four cases among their staff. Right now, they've weathered it. They don't have any positives in the facility right now. So Fireman's Home only had one or two cases. So we do have a substantial outbreak at the Grand. And we sort of expected it. You mentioned Brookwood. They have, or jails. Brookwood has an outbreak now. I believe we're up to 30 staff, 20 residents. The county jail has struggled a little bit, but they've kind of struggled in that they would have a positive or two, and then they would isolate. The good news about the jail is they're only about a third of their capacity, so they can isolate people really easily. And so they seem to be controlling this. Now, I would say this, and this is an indication of a couple things. Out of the 95 individuals at the Grand, 14 chose not to get the vaccine at all. And only 17 out of the remainder, if you will, 81, actually got the booster. So, which is an interesting number. But we have three people from the Grand who are in the hospital. Two out of the three are unvaccinated. The other one's vaccinated. And none of them are in the intensive care unit. So what's been reported out from the facility is that most of the people that are in there have no symptoms or very mild symptoms. And that's a side benefit of that vaccine, of those folks getting vaccinated, because they all have comorbidities. They all could be very ill, but they got the vaccine, and it's a side benefit.
And I don't want to clarify this, and you might not be able to answer this question, but basically it seems like there is no government action now in the worst part of the outbreak, because government action would be ineffective because the society is so fractured that so basically the people who are refusing to wear a mask or refusing to get a vaccine are basically controlling public policy now, because we can't do anything, because we can't send everybody a mask in the country, because why? They're not going to wear it.
Well, if you look at if you watch the national reports that come out, and you know, certainly the media can be accused of cherry picking, you know, their stories, but virtually but everyone who's a spokesperson for a hospital, is a doctor in a hospital, reports that they're at capacity in their ICUs, and it's filled with unvaccinated people. And that certainly has been, when you look at our deaths, you know, two deaths out of 124 vaccinated people. This has become a pandemic of the unvaccinated. And it is the unvaccinated people who are causing the clogging, if you will, in our hospitals. I guess your perspective is that they are kind of driving the bus when it comes to the policy. I think that, you know, what I'm seeing at the national level, out of the White House, out of the CDC, out of the State Health Department, is they're not ready to acknowledge that we're not going to beat this thing and that it's going to become endemic and we're going to have to live with it. But they're doing things now that are moving them in that direction. You can't move too quickly on this, because the public, like you, you pretty much just said, at the peak of when the numbers are highest, we're starting to do less. And that's a counterindicator for a lot of people. And I understand that. But I think that's where the government is going. Handing out the masks, trying to be as safe, you know, go out and be as safe as you can, go about your life, be as safe as you can, and try to do the best you can with getting vaccinated, getting boosted, and we're moving on.
And so right now, everyone in the world wants to find a test. They're going to be cheap and widespread in 2 weeks when this is all over, right?
I can't disagree with that. It's I think that a criticism of the Biden administration is that they should have cranked up the War Powers Act, and they should have made these masks more readily available more quickly. But you're right. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of test kits. There's going to be a lot of masks out there. And it's going to be, we're going to see dwindling numbers. But yeah, we should have had these test kits, you know, a month ago.
What is your recommendation for people that don't want to catch COVID, you know, a lot of people are afraid of what the long-term repercussions are going to be. We don't really know a lot of that. But if you're trying not to get COVID, what should you do right now for the next, you know, it's probably two more weeks of really serious numbers here locally?
Well, if you're fully vaccinated and boosted, get an N95 or a KN95. If you've heard the studies, even just in the last week, they are by far the most effective mask when it comes to keeping folks from getting the virus. So if you go out in public, I would get a KN95 and even put a cloth mask over it if you want, or a surgical mask over it. But the KN95 or the N95 is the most effective thing you could do for yourself right now.
And you need to find the real one, right? Because aren't there a lot of knockoff KN95s that are not really...
Unfortunately, that's true. That's very true. But you have to do your homework and do the best you can to get them. Now, I mean, if they're knockoffs, but they're still built the same way in terms of the levels of filters and whatever like that, I still think they're going to be effective. But they're not going to be 100% effective like the real thing. I think the other thing that people should take a good look at is any attendance at large events. Where there's a lot of people and a lot of people in fairly tight quarters. These are decisions we should be making going forward. Do I want to do this? Do I want to put myself in that exposure? And we had a staff person recently she's been one of our mainstays at all our pods and everything else like that. She's been an incredibly hard worker. She let her guard down about a month or so ago and went to a concert. And she got COVID. And she knew that she got it there. I mean, because everything else she was doing was so careful in her life. So that would be my advice to people. Just think before you do anything. Think before you make contact and whatever. We're past the holidays now. Unfortunately, that the test kits, the home kits, weren't available enough for the holidays because you're going to tested people on the spot to see if they were positive and whatever and made some decisions from there. But wear a good quality mask and think about where you're going.
All right, here's a real world question, and I'm sure a lot of businesses are wrestling with this too. Our radio station, we have a policy that only fully vaccinated folks can be back in the studio. Otherwise, they do work from home. What is the definition of fully vaccinated?
Good question. The CDC right now, the definition of fully vaccinated is the primary series. Two shots of Moderna, two shots of Pfizer, or a shot of J&J. The state of New York, in several guidances that have come out recently, is now saying or suggesting that fully vaccinated is the two shots and a booster. That doesn't help a lot with, like, the schools, for instance. A lot of the teachers aren't necessarily boosted yet. But when they change their quarantine and isolation guidance, they made it so that you didn't qualify for continuing to work through a quarantine unless you had the two shots and a booster. So the schools are struggling with that a little bit. But as far as I'm concerned, you got the two shots, you're fully vaccinated because that's what the CDC is telling me.
But if you go to a store and there's a sign on the door that says only fully vaccinated allowed, you don't really know what that means, right?
Well, you don't, except, like I say, what's the overriding guidance is the CDC guidance. That's what we've all been living with. And the state of New York typically will take the CDC guidance and they'll kind of, you know, change it up a little bit and, you know, modify it a little bit, but they'll put the CDC guidance out. So we've been following the CDC and they haven't changed it yet. So I'd say fully vaccinated is the primary series.
So we're having internal discussions. Should we change our policy? You don't think stores should necessarily change their policy to include boosters if their sign on the door says fully vaccinated, but they could.
Well, they could if that was going to be their decision. I think the problem that I have with it is that business is hurting enough. I don't think a lot of those businesses want to chase customers away. And if somebody has gone through the effort in the past to get their two shots, even if they're eligible for the booster and haven't done it yet, I still think fully vaccinated means two shots.
But it's kind of up to everyone. You know, if the shop owner is has comorbidities, then they may want to have, mm-hmm. you know.
Well, and, you know, let's face it, it works. The radio station doesn't have a lot of employees and doesn't have a lot of traffic in and out. You know, doesn't have a lot of customers coming and going. It would work for you to go with two shots and a booster. Would it work for Walmart? Does it work for a restaurant that's a fairly high-volume restaurant? You know, you'd be turning away a lot of potential business there, and I think that that's unfortunate. And again, I would love to see everybody get the booster that got the shots. I would love to see everybody get the shots. But I think that for a small business that doesn't have a high movement, or in your particular case with a radio station, I think it's reasonable to go with two shots and a booster. But I just don't think, generally speaking, in terms of business, it's going to hurt business.
So you hinted at the good news. I wanted to get to if there's any good news now. That the New York City numbers have started to fall off. I think the Boston wastewater indicators seem to say it's about to fall off. So this is the Omicron is about to burn itself out because it can only do so if it's going up at basically straight up, it has to come straight down soon, right?
Yeah, I think that I think we're going to be in a wholly different place by the end of this month. Very different place.
In terms of long term, that actually because so many people are getting it now, there is we may reach this herd immunity that people have been talking about for 2.5 years.
Yeah, if we in Columbia County, in terms of vaccination rate. We are at 72%. We've heard from the CDC and the National Institute of Health as well that 70% is herd immunity. So I think we're doing much better among certain segments of the population. So I think we have reached herd immunity. I think that when you look at the numbers, and our numbers are very concrete. You know, today we had 109. Well, we had 109 just before we came on the air. But is it a real number? How many people are positive out there who didn't want to be tested? They don't want to know.
Or took a home test, right? And then they're not in the statistics, right?
Right. It's not part of the statistics. They took a home test, they're positive, and they went to work because they can't. They don't have any time. So I think it's easily, the numbers are easily twice what or more what we're seeing. And so to that, speaking to that herd immunity, I think that that's part of the reason why this thing is going to run its course, because I think we have a lot of people out there who have herd immunity. In addition to their vaccination status, a lot of people with good solid immunity out there, and that's why this thing is going to just drop off.
At least temporarily, right? Because we still don't know how, if you catch COVID, this month, how long that means you won't catch it again.
Well, we do have cases of people who the state of New York considers it a new infection if it's 90 days out. And we've had people who, unfortunately for them, I mean, they really had a tough time of it. We had one nurse in particular at the hospital who got it twice and got it bad twice. It was really sick with it. So, yes, are we going to get, can we possibly get, well, as we know, over 60% of our cases, the numbers that we report every day, are people who are fully vaccinated. So fully vaccinated and having had the illness doesn't necessarily mean you're not going to get it again.
And so in the short term, we think this is going to drop off and be much better in February. Like I have concert tickets I want to buy for March, and I've been afraid to, but it sounds like I should maybe be able to go ahead and do that.
I think you should. And again, what I would say, as I said before, I would get my hands on a KN95 or an N95, and I would certainly be, when you sit at the concert, if you're sitting in seats, you're going to be sitting next to people and whatever. But I would definitely get a good quality mask and make sure I got the booster and go from there.
Yeah, I think this is a Nigerian guitarist playing. I think people will be standing or dancing. But so, but is this? I mean, we don't really know what's going to happen in February and March. Is this really the whole thing is going to come to an end, or we're at this thing where we're just getting a shot every year like the flu for the rest of our lives?
Well, we might get a shot every year for the rest every year. We might get a shot every 6 months. This thing is much more contagious than the flu, and there's just as parts of the world. This thing started in Africa, in a part of that country where 5% of the population is vaccinated. There's lots of places for it to breed and mutate and take on different variants and whatever. And we're going to be living with this. We're going to be living with this for the rest of our lives. We're going to get vaccine. Vaccines are going to become available, and that might be available every 6 months, might be once a year, and people are going to choose to do it or not choose to do it. But it's going to be part of our life for the rest of our lives.
And I think what you're hinting at is that there could be another Omicron, because there are certainly parts of the world that are not as vaccinated, still.
Well, there will be another Omicron. This thing will keep mutating. There is some variant, I think, in Belgium that they're talking about now and whatever. I think it's going to keep, and that's what coronaviruses do. They mutate and they keep growing in the environment, and some of the variations don't catch on and they drop right off. They just die within the population. And I think we could have another Omicron. We could have another Delta, which was certainly we probably have Delta going on at the same time as Omicron, and that could be accounting for some of the more serious illnesses. But we are going to be living with this virus unless we can get the whole world vaccinated, which is impractical. It won't happen.
All right. I see we're coming to the end of our time. What other important things do you need to tell people?
Hang in there, get vaccinated. Take advantage of the test as they become available. I think they will become much more readily available. Make good decisions about this. I understand if you don't have any time at work, you don't have any sick time or vacation time or whatever at work, and you become positive. Make good decisions about this, because you may not get a call from the health department as time evolves. You may not get a call from the state VCC line, but you still need to make good decisions. You need to take personal responsibility for what's going on. If you've been exposed to somebody who's was positive, treat yourself as potentially going to become a positive, because you could very well become a positive. Watch for symptoms and get yourself tested if you develop them.
Yeah, we've
I guess the one thing I guess that at a personal level, in terms of just I just struggle with it is if you're a parent of a child that's eligible for the vaccine, get the child vaccinated. The claim that we heard at the beginning last January was, it's too new. I don't want to get it. It's too new. Well, over 200 million people in the country now have the vaccine, and a lot of kids have it now. And, I think there's always side effects from the shot, and there's always folks that have some reactions, but it's been pretty minimal, and I think it's a safe vaccine. Just get your kids vaccinated.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to the reporter that did a story about the anti-vax group in Columbia County this week, and I couldn't really name a story around here about someone getting a bad reaction to the vaccine or some bad outcome happening to someone because they took the vaccine. There's been millions and millions of people that take the vaccine, and there's very, very, very few cases of that, right?
Well, we did over 20,000 shots at the college last year, January, February, March, whatever. And we had four or five people who had reactions to it. And that was it. That reported back to us, and that was it.
And a reaction is they had a bad afternoon.
Well, reactions as in, not the usual side effects, but, maybe, some difficulty breathing like you would in a reaction to something you're allergic to, kind of thing. And there's some people are allergic to some things that there's nothing in the shot other than RNA. But there are people who had reactions, but very, very, very few.
All right, 20 seconds. Any clinics you want to mention in 15 seconds now?
Well, next week, Thursday, 3 to 6, Friday, 1 to 3, we do shots here at the